Okay, and here we are back. Headlines up now. I've divided the news today into two large segments. The first one has to do with the domestic rioting here, the mass criminality. No, it's not protesting. There are some protests, but let's be honest. It's criminality. It's what it is. The news itself is, it's beginning again to look back over its shoulder at the coronavirus, which is not fading into the dust. It's right there. In fact, it's not over anybody's shoulder. It's right with us. But no one's talking about it right now in the controlled media. It's just the way the media works. Neil Ferguson, that failed coronavirus model expert out of Imperial College in London, they call him Professor Lockdown. Now in disgrace, he's the one that came up with the model that I believe it was 2 or 3 million Americans were going to die. And Dr. Faustus and Debbie Birx used that to convince Trump to essentially destroy the U.S. economy by locking everything down, guaranteeing Trump's place in history as probably the most catastrophically incompetent president of all time, at least in this country. So we've got a story about Neil up there, Nutty Neil. Trump says now he took hydroxy to prevent coronavirus infection, but a new study shows that hydroxy doesn't work. And yet there's another story that says the study that claims it doesn't work is beginning to fall apart. So who do you believe? You just read it and you got to make your own decision. A Billy Gates long-sought universal vaccine passport has been in development for 2 years now, apparently. That's another story to read and consider. Again, I can't vouch for the facts and the data and all these stories, but they are part of the panorama that I see every day and that all of you see as well. Dr. Faustus now says that a coronavirus vaccine may not work for very long, maybe 6 months. That's it. You'll have to read the story to find out why. I didn't have time. Governments who employ lockdowns, according to another essay, saved virtually no one in the long run, made the coronavirus pandemic worse, sentenced many more to death from non-coronavirus issues because they couldn't get the heart and cancer and other treatments that they needed for several months, and some still are locked up in waiting lines to get them. Anyhow, there's a lot of color, a lot of texture, a lot of seemingly incongruent stories up there, and I just put up a sampling of them for you every day to look at. Dr. Henry Nyman is back tonight. We are in June now, Henry, and we're heading into July and then the conventions in August. Coronavirus cases in Austin, Texas have significantly increased since the reopening there. They've gone up somewhat in Georgia. There are more confirmed cases among inmates in New Mexico. These are just the stories that we hear about. There are a lot of increases all over the country that we're just not hearing about for rather obvious reasons. Welcome back, Henry. How are you?
Not bad. The numbers, like you say, are going up pretty much. I've been on the road, so I don't really have today's numbers that I keep tallies on. But Yeah, just using the Worldometer, which does a pretty good job of giving details on new cases and does a fairly complete job for the various states. It's got the total number of cases now in the U.S. to 1.9 million, so we're closing on the 2 million mark as far as cases are concerned. Mm-hmm. And the deaths are up to 109,000. So it's going up, like I said, 1 to 1.5 thousand per day. And it is, as you noted, June now, April came and went, and the virus stayed. and didn't disappear in April, didn't disappear in May, and isn't going to disappear in June. And I wanted to put a little bit of the data into perspective as far as you had mentioned predictions and a million deaths and people are
Ferguson
kind of
said two
trying.
To three originally.
Right. And that's what they basically said for the U.S. If there was no lockdowns, that's the types of numbers you would see. And with the lockdowns, the number was 10 times less. It was projected between 100 and 200,000. And it has already passed 100,000. And it hasn't really hit the fall yet. And these announcements that the projections are too high and the lockdown, it was unnecessary and blah, 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 blah. These are made by people just don't really know a whole lot about virology, apparently don't know much about pandemics. And the idea that, which is one of your questions yesterday, trying to compare this pandemic to epidemics, they're just totally different. I mean, this epidemic is on a par with 1918, till 50 million people. You just saw the little herald wave. That's the hello, I'm here, not guess what I can do.
Why don't we call it the Henry wave? Let's call it the Henry wave.
It's not the Henry. It's a herald wave. It's well known. This isn't something right. I made up. And it's something that whoever you're quoting has no clue about. They don't know anything about the history.
Well, there are a lot of
they don't know anything about pandemics.
That's for sure.
Yeah. And they've all got opinions based on nothing. And that's part of the issue is that the pandemic has just begun. The pandemic hasn't ended. And they're looking at the initial numbers, which are historic, and saying, well, these numbers, 2 to 3 million dead. Wait a year from now and see. You'll probably be happy to have 2 or 3 million dead because it's probably going to be quite a bit higher than that. And the reason it does that is you can get an idea from the excessive deaths that I had talked about a few times now. And the reason I bring up the excessive deaths is that it pretty much addresses the nonsense that's out there saying, oh, this isn't a big deal. It's here, it's gone, it's going to go away, da 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 da. And the excessive deaths show you can go back 100 years and these spikes are not a regular occurrence. These spikes where you can actually see this big jump in cases happens like once in a century. It happened in 1918. And that's one of the things that was pointed out is how dramatic it was. You don't have to look at influenza or anything broken down. You can just look at death, period. And for this pandemic, you can look at death, period. You don't have to do any testing. You don't have to say how many lab confirmed there were. You don't have to say how many were, I think it was a heart attack, but it just so happened to have the coronavirus and they died. And, they had a heart attack or they had kidney failure or they had whatever they want to ascribe the death to. And it's just nonsense. And the reason it's nonsense is all you have to do is look at death certificates. You don't have to look at the death certificate and see why they died. You just have to see when they died. And you have to see how many died on a given day and how many died on a given week and how many died in a given month. And then you compare that to how many normally die on that day or that week or that month. And you see excessive deaths. you see a lot of excessive deaths. You were talking about, oh, that's probably what's going on with China. They might have a million deaths. They're just not reporting it. Da, 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 da. Well, if you look at excessive deaths, you can see what's going on. Now, how well they report that in China, I don't know. They report them in Europe. They report them in the United States. They're not related to infectious diseases. They're not related to testing. They're related to death, period. How many people died today? And they count how many people died by how many death certificates were sold out. And the death certificates are going to be pretty accurate because, you know, people take death seriously and they want to know why they died. And even if the cause of death is not accurate, they want to know that they died. And so you can use the death certificate. And that's what I was going over. I was showing that with the death certificates, you can see a bad flu year. You can, it basically shows how many are died. It shows what the curve for excessive deaths is. The curve for excessive deaths is based to the historical record for the excess deaths. Mm-hmm. And then when it goes above that, they put a little star on it in the case of the CDC that there were excessive deaths that week. And they've got it broken down at the CDC website by state. There's others to kind of break things down by the largest cities and how each city does. But the CDC's got it listed by state. The only city they've got on there is New York City. So that's for comparison. They pulled New York City out of New York State, and there were, you know, a lot of excessive deaths in both locations. And when you look at that, you can see that on a bad flu year, there will be excessive deaths, and it'll be generally for 1 or 2 weeks, and it'll generally be they got to that line that says excessive deaths, or they went a little bit above the line that went to excessive deaths. And most years that doesn't happen. Most years they kind of they expect to have more cases die in the winter, and a significant number of those to be flu-related. They're not lab-confirmed flu-related. The number that are actually tested is a very tiny percentage of the number of actual flu cases. And when they talk about there being 10,000 or 20,000 or 30,000 deaths in a given season, that's kind of an estimate. You know, they're saying, well, you got this many excessive deaths, and you normally get this many flu cases, and then probably this percentage of them are due to the flu, and mm-hmm. then you kind of come up with a number. It's all indirect. It's not that they're actually doing lab confirmation. They're not. The flu is not reportable except for adolescents, so it's not like, oh, they've got this, all the doctors are calling up and saying how many of their patients died from the flu or had the flu. They have some surveillance, and they kind of get a rough estimate. It's not lab confirmed. So the reason I've been talking about the excessive deaths is you don't need, you know, I don't know who's, you know, making the determination, da 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 da. I don't know if they really, you know, did adequate testing. I don't know what percentage of the total they tested. I don't know how many of the people that died from the virus they said died from something else, because the doctor came in and said, well, it didn't die from pneumonia, so it must have been, it was a heart attack, and it must be unrelated to the virus. It's just a coincidence. So if you look at the excess deaths, that gets all these subjective determinations and these various variables that go vary from state to state and from country to country. And it kind of makes it hard to make a comparison. You can take a look and say, well, they said they had X number of, of cases, and they had a tiny number of deaths, that they're not counting the deaths. They're basically saying that the deaths were due to something else, and they end up having a lower case fatality rate because they've got the same virus, and they've got similar populations, and the reason there's 10 times as many deaths in one country over another is because the one country is testing more. And so the pandemic is dramatic in that you can see the excessive deaths and the Herald wave. You don't have to wait for the big wave to see it. You can see it already. And like I say, the U.S. is number one in the world. They've got about a quarter of the world's cases. And it's up to 109 deaths now. And the numbers continue to go up. It's at a slightly slower pace right now. But the pandemics like 1918, or even the pandemic like the swine flu, which didn't kill that many. But there was a big difference between what was seen in the spring and what was seen in the fall. And you can see that now by just looking at the excessive deaths. The excessive deaths are most striking in the states where there are known large outbreaks of the virus. So they're high in New York, they're high in Massachusetts, they're high in New Jersey, they're high in Illinois, Pennsylvania, Louisiana. And all of those states had a relatively large outbreak, and all of them except for Illinois, the outbreak was almost exclusively the Italian strain. And that's why those outbreaks are on the eastern part of the U.S., because that's where the Italian strain flew into. And it flew in while the CDC was looking on the West Coast and looking for people coming from China. Mm-hmm. And because they were interested in China, these cases came in from Europe. And they went unnoticed. There was no contact.
Well, the Trump administration's focus on China was really asinine. He cut off the China national carrier from coming in here, but did nothing about all the other airlines who were bringing Chinese in here every damn day. It was stupid.
But the reality is that this virus transmits more easily than flu. And
that's for sure. 10 times, some people say.
And most of the cases that brought the virus over were not foreign national, which is who he put a restriction on. They were Americans. They were Americans that went to China, or they were Americans that went to Europe. Actually, probably more came from Europe. So it had already moved from China to Europe. And then that probably brought in the biggest influx of cases. But once it was here, it spread. So by the time he even knew there was a problem, it was already
too late. Well, you made that point at the end of January, early February.
Right.
You said there's virus all over the country.
Exactly. And there was. And there was no reason for there not to be, because the population is very mobile. They fly around. And, you know, if you got, 10, 15 cases you identified, you got hundreds, if not thousands, of cases that you didn't identify. And then if you got hundreds or thousands of cases, the virus, and you didn't know about them, and there was no contact tracing, and in this case, the virus transmits from asymptomatic cases. And so many of the people that were transmitting it had no idea they were transmitting. They were asymptomatic. Some of the ones that were transmitting it had, like, a cold, or they might have thought they had the flu. And in fact, many of them came over during flu season. And so they thought they had the flu. They weren't really that sick. They didn't think they had to go to the doctor. They didn't get diagnosed. And if they came from Europe, even if they did go to the doctor, mm-hmm. that was it. Mm-hmm. They said, oh, well, let's see. Oh, no, your flu is negative. You got some upper respiratory, you know, virus or something. You know, it's flu season, but that's not the only virus that's floating around. There's lots of viruses that are common in the winter. And, you know, see if... rest in bed and drink plenty of fluids.
There was a lot of dodging. People just didn't even
right.
think about it. Here's
right.
you were on the road today. You know who else had coronavirus since April?
Yeah, I just saw that when I got here.
Yeah.
It was George
Floyd.
Yeah, right.
And
he already had
coronary artery disease or hypertensive heart disease. And for all we know, the virus may have attacked his heart. We don't know, and contributed to his death. I'm not getting anybody off the hook with that. It's just a fact.
Right, right.
He was infected.
Yeah. Well, my guess is, you know, use that as a defense. He was positive. It's not clear that he was
Oh, they'll use it as a defense, all right. You got
right.
that right.
I mean, he was diagnosed, I think, April 3rd. So, and mm-hmm. he wasn't symptomatic, and he tested positive on an autopsy test, you know, in addition to the test he had on April 3rd.
What does that mean? Does that mean that he still was in the throes of an active asymptomatic infection? Or does that mean they tested and there were still some viruses hanging around that were not particularly
right.
active?
Uh-huh. Right. It's likely to be the latter, because... generally, you don't stay infected that long, especially if you're asymptomatic. So if he mm-hmm. wasn't symptomatic and he was positive in April, you know, it's way too long to think that he's had
right.
an active infection for that time period. But
you
what
know,
tends
you,
to
you know
happen?
What else he was positive for? He tested positive for fentanyl and methamphetamines
right,
as well.
Right, right. He had
clever fellow.
Also. So, but it's unlikely that any of those actually were the cause of death. You know? So they may try to use some of that as a defense.
Well, it's going to be an interesting defense if it gets that far. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, but the coronavirus is, you know, that is unlikely to be active virus at that stage. And, you know, if they, they did an autopsy. I mean, one of the advantages of doing testing at autopsy is you can get a good sample. And
good nasal swab with the patient
right,
is not resisting.
Right. Right. And so, you know, that's probably going to be coincidental, because he had, the other explanation would be that he got infected a second time. I mean, that would be a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little hard to say. The most likely is that there was just residual RNA and it was an infection. The other possibility is it's been long enough that he could have been reinfected. And,
no, I think the Chinese dosed the fentanyl with more virus, and that's how he got it the second time. That's my view. I'm kidding.
Yeah, well...
It's a joke.
Right. But there is, you know, a lot of virus. And Minnesota really is having kind of a large increase. They didn't have as much virus back in April, and they actually have more virus now. And so it is possible without the fentanyl that it just being in Minnesota was enough to cause him to be reinfected a second time. So
sure.
it's conceivable.
Especially when you make porn movies with a lot of different people, you come into contact with all sorts of fun things.
But I would guess that it's more likely that is either residual RNA mm-hmm. that's there and it wasn't infectious, or he had actually been infected a second time, but it wasn't symptomatic. But
does that mean that there's a possibility, Henry, that it did go, for example, to do damage in his heart? I'm not getting anywhere near a defense on this. I'm just saying we know
right. The
virus can go to varying organ systems in the
body. Right. So I mean, it's conceivable that it could have done damage to his heart on the first infection. You know, So regardless of whether it was active 2 months later, which I think is very unlikely, or he got infected a second time, it's possible, but, you know, it's not likely that was the cause of death. It could have been another underlying condition that he had, and there could have been some issues there. But, I think the clue was when he kept saying, "I can't breathe." that's a good signal that it might have had something to do with the knees on the neck. And in any event, that was an aside, and that does give you an idea that the virus is quite widespread. And
all right, here's another one. I got to jump in here. This is from China. You didn't see this today. Just came out in Forbes. You're on the road.
Okay.
Great news for the markets. Data out of China, this is Forbes, tells us that the second wave of the coronavirus is unsurfable. It's flat. There is no wave to catch. And if there is no meaningful second wave months after lifting restrictions in Wuhan, then there might not be any meaningful second waves anywhere else. Markets
are
already onto this line of thinking, says Forbes. This week, Wuhan's public health authorities reported that they are nearly done testing some 11 million city inhabitants for SARS-CoV-2, the mysterious pathogen, blah, blah, blah. So there we go. That's the latest from China.
Right. And China is is about 12 hours ahead of the United States. It's not
correct.
4 months ahead.
That's right.
So they need to do a calendar check. It's not fall in China. It's the summer, just like it is here.
Tell Forbes
the beginning
that.
Of summer.
They're doing things for the market.
There's all kinds of nonsense out there.
Well, that's why I bring it up.
The history of flu pandemics is that there's a minor wave in the spring and a major wave in the fall. And the flu is more common in the fall than it is in the spring. And that's when the damage is done.
Was there a ghost of an image of that kind of scenario with SARS? Did SARS come on? I forget. I can't remember. Did it come on stronger in the fall?
No. SARS did kind of fade away in April. But SARS started in the fall, and then it became kind of this other version that seemed to be more effective than the initial, but that was jumping a species. And the version that went in the Metropole Hotel, which basically was in February, led to a lot of cases in March and April, and then it started to fade in May, and then it kind of went away. But part of the fading had to do with contact tracing. That it was a limited number, and that's why I was kind of surprised at your questions last night, because even though it's a related virus, it's a totally different situation. The SARS was an epidemic; it was primarily an epidemic in China, it got out of China to a few other countries, mostly because of one person, this physician that came to Hong Kong for a wedding and checked it in the Metropole Hotel and vomited outside of his room. And that put enough virus into the air and had enough contact that he infected a couple dozen people in that hotel, which was an international hotel. And that's how the virus got to Toronto, and that's how it got to Hanoi, and that's how it got to Singapore. And that's actually how it spread in Hong Kong. And so those four areas all came from one person. The sequence of those viruses, they all had the same 29 nucleotide deletion that he had. And it was an example of a super spreader putting the virus out, and then a bunch of people that caught that virus were also super spreaders. They weren't all super spreaders. There were other people in that hotel. There were travelers. There was a couple that traveled to British Columbia. There wasn't a big outbreak in British Columbia. They might have infected a few other people that had minor cases, and mm-hmm. you probably don't even remember hearing about British Columbia. All you heard about was Toronto. And so SARS was a very local type of an outbreak. There were about 700 people that died, and there were about 7,000 or 8,000 cases. So the U.S. has 20,000 cases per day. So you're talking about 8,000 cases worldwide in an entire season versus 20,000 cases a day. Yeah.
We know there's no comparison, right? That's a point that we've made here for a long time. Agreed.
Right. So an epidemic is containable by contact tracing because there aren't that many cases. And if you can go and follow the contacts and get the contacts quarantined so they don't mm-hmm. pass the virus on further, mm-hmm. you basically stop the virus in its tracks. And that's why most of the cases in Canada were in Toronto, because that's where the super spreader was. And that's where the cases were. And that's where the cases ended.
Now hold on. I didn't make myself clear enough last night. You didn't understand what I was asking because I didn't phrase it properly. All I asked was, since these viruses are relatively similar, they call this SARS-CoV-2, and since SARS-1, as you said a few minutes ago, just faded away eventually, is there any reason to think there might be a possibility that this SARS-2 might also adopt a similar posture and sort of fade away at some point in the future? Or will it be endemic and here like the influenza every year? What do you think? That's the question I ask.
I think it'll be here like influenza, and it'll be back every year, and it'll be widespread because it's a pandemic. Pandemics don't go away.
Understood.
Epidemics go away.
And that's
why they use those definitions. The definition isn't based on how many people died, and the definition is solely based
on
the
dynamics of the spread. I thoroughly understand.
Right.
And the infectivity of the organism.
And so for you to get a pandemic. Mm-hmm. That means the virus spreads relatively easily, and that means it goes to, it literally means it goes around the world. So
we had a
everywhere.
Lot of frequent flyer miles. That's how it did it.
Right. Well, no, to be a pandemic, it moves around that way, but it has to get established. I mean, that didn't happen with SARS. That's why it was an epidemic. It got a good shot. I mean, with Toronto, it basically came and they thought they had it under control, and then all of a sudden it came back. It didn't come back because somebody else flew into Toronto. it just came back because the contact tracing wasn't that thorough, and it kept on going, and all of a sudden it kind of took off again because they weren't quarantining the contacts because they didn't know who these contacts were.
For those who don't know, Henry was right in the middle of that whole SARS thing as a scientist, and he was there, and that's why this is so very important that we have his expertise here. Go ahead.
Right, and I was looking at the sequences then, and all of the sequences had the same 29 nucleotide deletion. Now, after that outbreak, China, a very large consortium, because we were competing with them. I was working with Yi Guan. I had actually written a paper about the new version,
That's funny.
It was really focused on the amount of recombination. But China had a very large consortium with, you know, like a dozen labs and 50 different scientists on the, as authors on the paper. And they had a lot of isolates from Guangdong province before it moved into the Metropole Hotel. And so they had a very extensive analysis. And they had deletion, but they didn't have that same 29 nucleotide deletion. So there were a bunch of deletions in a bunch of viruses. It was very heterogeneous. And so there were plenty of viruses that had deletions and had different types of recombination even. I mean, my paper really focused more on the recombination, but it was really the sequences that were most common at the time the paper was written were these international sequences, because that's what all these labs were doing. There were labs in Singapore, and there were labs in Canada, and the CDC didn't really have a whole lot to do with the U.S. because they didn't really have any sequences. The only sequence they had was the Urbani sequence, which is actually from a WHO worker who was kind of overseeing the outbreak in Vietnam, in Hanoi. So that's where that sequence came from. But the bottom line was that everything that was international, I think there might have been one sequence from Frankfurt that didn't have this 29 nucleotide deletion. But every other sequence, you know, everything from Singapore and everything from Taiwan and everything from Vietnam and everything from Toronto all had that same 29 nucleotide deletion. So but the point is that virus really didn't spread. You know, they were pretty aggressive at trying to get it under control. It got out of control initially because they really weren't expecting the ease of spread, and it spread to healthcare workers and it spread to other patients. But it got under control, and it really faded away because it needs to keep infecting new people to spread and come around and cause problems. But it did actually come around again. It came around the following fall. And it again seemed to involve wet markets and civet cats, which were one of one of the exotic animals that were sold
delicacy.
At these. In any event, it actually had a slightly different virus. It actually looked to be somewhat of a recombinant from the initial one, but it didn't have the 29 nucleotide deletion, and it caused a lot of concern, and they did a lot of culling of the wet markets and cleaned up the wet markets and kind of nipped it in the bud. They didn't have that many cases, and they did contact tracing on those, and they kind of removed the source, and it went away. And then at least as far as reported cases are concerned, there weren't any more. But and then, as you mentioned, MERS was another beta corona, novel coronavirus, and it showed up in the Middle East, and it was also found in bats. I mean, there was a lot of research that was done with the SARS virus. The SARS caused a lot of concern, and the thought was, if one person could cause this many cases internationally because he happened to go to an international hotel and infect a bunch of people that then flew out of there in different directions, that, if you had 10 people like that, maybe it wouldn't have gotten out of control, and it would have spread, and it would have been much, much larger numbers. And then maybe it wouldn't have been something that was just an epidemic. It would have turned into a pandemic. But once it turns into a pandemic, it doesn't go away. I mean, the virus from 1918, the H1N1 was the flu virus until there was a new pandemic in 1957. So between 1918 and 1957, mm-hmm. everything was H1N1. And then in 57, it became H2N2, and that one lasted. It didn't go away. It didn't last that long because the new virus came along, and the H2 got replaced by H3. And then there was a H3N2 in 1968, and H3N2 is still around. So the viruses end up going away when a competitor arrives and displaces it. But the flu mm-hmm. didn't go away. The flu's been around, and the version of flu that's around is the one that came up by a pandemic. And then in 2009, it wasn't H3N2, it was H1N1, but it was swine H1N1, and that displaced the seasonal H1N1 that was circulating then. And that didn't go away. I mean, the virus today, if you go and get a flu shot, the H1N1 that's in that quadrivalent now. They usually give you two influenza Bs and two influenza A's.
It used to be a tri, and now it's four, huh?
Right. They couldn't get the influenza B right. Whichever one they picked, the other one showed up, and they kind of gave up trying to guess which one was going to come up the next year, and they just did both of them. But for H1N1, it's still swine flu. I mean, if you get H1N1, seasonal flu is gone, long gone. It was gone since 2009, and it was replaced by swine flu, and swine flu is the H1N1 that's circulating. So when the virus becomes a pandemic, that means that it transmits easily enough that it could get established in every country in the world. So it is worldwide. And it tends to come back in the case of flu. There's a little bit of a battle on influenza A between H1N1 and H3N2. They both are circulating, but the ratio changes from season to season. But one doesn't make the other one go away or become dominant. It kind of flip-flops back and forth as to which one is dominant, but they're both circulating. And the reason this pandemic, this COVID pandemic is so concerning is it fits the same pattern that these other pandemics fit. And if you look at those excessive deaths, mm-hmm. there aren't excessive deaths in every state. It in the spring, it didn't get to the levels that influenza gets to. So, if you look at the maps that the CD puts up and the flu season starts, they go and, at the beginning in the fall, they kind of show where the virus is widespread and where it's detected and where it's a little bit above. And what ends up happening is when you get into the flu season, it ends up being widespread in every state. It eventually covers up the whole country and they're all at a high level. And the difference from one season to the next is kind of when it reaches that level, but it reaches that level. So you have it widespread in every state. You don't have COVID widespread in every state in the fall. It was just making its appearance. So it was there in some states, the ones I mentioned, you know, New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and Massachusetts. Those all had high levels of virus. And those all show up just looking at excessive deaths. So you can just look at that curve and say, what happened in the spring of 2020? Because that's where they all happened. Some started a little bit earlier than others. Some are just now getting going. And so there's a little bit difference in the start date, but they're all in, you know, late March, April, or May is kind of when they got going, and they got to this excessive level. But the excessive level is significantly higher than the excessive level seen with flu. So the states that had these larger outbreaks have very big curves that you can see simply by looking at how many people died that week. And there were so many that died that they just jump out if you look on these graphs. But they don't jump out for every state. Some of the states never got to the level that you'd see in a bad flu year. They kind of look like a regular flu year where they didn't have excessive deaths. They had more people die in the winter than died in the summer because they had more flu cases, but they didn't get above the historic level. There was nothing unusual about that level. And if it's a bad flu season, then they get above that, but they usually just barely get above it, and they usually get above it for 2 or 3 weeks. They don't get above it for 6 or 8 weeks. And that's an indication that what happened in the spring is just a herald wave. That's just the virus is just getting started. And when it's going to make its appearance, it's going to make its appearance just like the flu. It's going to come back in the fall. And in the fall, it's got the potential that it's going to be widespread in every state. It's not going to be a subset of the state. And so what you saw in New York and you saw in Massachusetts and Illinois and Louisiana, those outbreaks are going to reappear, but they're going to show up everywhere. So you're going to have all 50 states of those types of outbreaks. And it's likely that the virus is going to be adapted so that even in states that have already had it, like New York, you're not only going to have excessive deaths, but you're going to have more than you had when it first made the appearance, because it was still feeling its way out because it had just dumped species. It hadn't really been selected for this is the best version of COVID to attack humans. And the other thing that's unusual about this virus is the polybasic cleavage site. And because it's got that polybasic cleavage site, it's not limited to the respiratory tract. It can go and cause cardiac problems.
It can cause neurological.
There's another paper out that is talking about how it affects endothelial cells. So it's basically
A circulatory disease.
It's a circulatory disease, and it leads to these clotting problems. And that's why you're having all these clottings all over the place.
That seems like it's the answer.
And so there's a lot of problems with this virus.
We got to say goodnight, so hurry up.
There's big reason to be concerned, and the fact that the fall wave hasn't shown up in China when it's the summer is because it's not the fall.
Right. Well, look who wrote the story, Forbes. I get why.
Yeah. So if it's you know, this time next year, and nothing really happens, and it fades away, or they can just got everything I just told you. But pandemics don't go away. They come in act. If it had the ability to establish itself worldwide and not just, you know, one city here and one city there, but, you know, basically significant numbers, it's not going away. It's got a new host.
Very good. Okay. Henry, you've laid it out perfectly. You're in the records now. It's there. So we got it. Thank you. Talk to you tomorrow night.
Sounds good. Talk to you tomorrow. Okay.
All right. Take care.
Goodbye.
Good night. Okay, thank you for being here. Back in 21 hours. Talk to you then.